Hi everybody, I'm Steve Pearce. I work with lawyers on career transformation. And in the last year, I've seen a real increase in people coming to me saying they want a completely different direction. Maybe you're in that category. Maybe you're fed up with the 24/7, always on culture. Maybe you just want to do something completely different, shake things up. This podcast, Project Pivot, is all about lawyers who change it up. We'll be sharing a whole range of stories, from people who've started their own business to people who've retrained as psychotherapists or teachers. And I'm really looking forward to sharing these stories with you. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I wonder how many of you have wondered what it's like to relocate between continents, not just once, but several times. Or to transition between different functions in a law firm, or to be involved in a startup that's right at the intersection between law and technology. Well, our guest today, Nikki Shaver, has done all of those things. She's a former lawyer and is co-founder of Legal Tech Hub, which is fast becoming an indispensable platform for law firms looking to access the latest technology. She joined us from New York, and I know you're going to love the conversation. So let's go for it. So I've been looking at your career history and, you know, I feel like I've got jet lag. There's so much movement and relocation around the world. So could you just give us that sort of high level sense of how, you know the career has developed until now?
So I'm international by background. I grew up in Europe. My mum's Australian, my father's Canadian. By my nature, I was always probably going to have a career that spans borders simply because that's how I'm used to operating from the get-go. I won't take you back too far to my undergraduate degree, but I will talk about when I started practicing law and studying law. I studied law in Sydney, Australia. I practiced there for 10 years. I was a litigator specializing in defamation law and media law. I went in-house and worked as well with media companies in Australia. And then when we had kids, my husband and I, we decided to move closer to the North American side of the family, where there were also small children emerging in the family. We moved over to Canada, and it was there that I fell into innovation and legal tech and immediately realized that I absolutely loved it. I had really enjoyed practicing law as well, but this was something really new that I hadn't even realized existed. And it turned out I had a real natural aptitude for technology and thinking things through and problem solving, which is really core to that type of work. And so I relatively quickly ended up as a director level role with a large Canadian firm doing that type of work. And then I was recruited to move to New York and lead global teams running innovation with a major firm in the US. And I can talk about my entrepreneurial journey, but perhaps I'll leave it there, Steve, for now, because that's a long introduction already.
Really interesting. Well, no, just touching on the work that you did in Australia, that was media work, wasn't it? And some quite interesting advice that you were giving.
It was fascinating working with clients in the media. So television networks, newspaper organizations were my major clients. And then I actually worked in-house both with newspapers and a TV network as well. And so the type of advice typically that you'd be giving, I mean, some of my work when I was in private practice, that was litigation work as well as what we called pre-publication work. So working with newspapers to review articles before they went to print to ensure that there was no issue from a regulatory perspective, from a defamation perspective, from a copyright perspective, and so on. And then internally, when I worked in-house, it was similar type of work, working really closely with reporters, with journalists to ensure that what actually went to print or went to air was above board and complied with the law. And in the TV area, that also means reviewing television shows before they go to air, sometimes live. So sitting there and being the person who's there live, so that you can press the button in that short period of delay if there's a really significant issue and something needs to be beeped out later. So yeah, really fascinating work, actually.
And I get the sense that you really enjoyed, you know, the legal work, right? It's not the case that you made a pivot later on in life because you definitely come to the conclusion that world wasn't for you. That doesn't seem to be what happened.
You're absolutely right, Steve. And I think I'm a little bit unusual, actually, in my field, because many people I work with now really didn't enjoy being a lawyer and did it for a relatively short time. I loved my life as a lawyer. I enjoyed even running up to court and handling urgent injunctions and loved being in court. I really enjoyed all of that type of work. So it absolutely was not that I did not enjoy work and was looking for something different. It's more that opportunities came my way, circumstances changed, and I fell into something completely different that then turned out also to be wonderful.
And just talk to me a bit about those major relocations. I mean, how do you find that? You say that the sort of background has been pretty international from the get-go, but those are pretty major relocations that we're talking about here.
Yeah, I suppose because I had lived in Canada before. I had family in Canada. So it just didn't really throw me. It was like coming to a different home of mine. That's really how I feel about Australia and Canada. They're both home in different ways. So I think compared to most people, probably it didn't feel as significant. At the time, though, we were moving with small children. That made it quite significant. And I think the one thing that I would say to your audience, Steve, who are thinking about different types of work in the legal industry, one of the benefits of working in alternative legal careers is that you are not as bound by jurisdiction as you are as a straight lawyer. And that is one of the great benefits, I think, of working in legal tech, legal innovation, any of the kind of allied professional roles around legal, is that it does give you that freedom to move if the opportunities call.
So for you, building on that, for you, knowledge management became the sort of central strand of your career, certainly by the time you moved on to Paul Hastings. Was that something you were always interested in? How did that transition occur?
No. So I had no idea what knowledge management was when I arrived in Canada. And by the way, I must say, there's a real difference in the way that these terms are used in Canada, the US, and the UK. So in the UK, knowledge management is something to do with developing precedents and handling content for lawyers. In the US and Canada, knowledge management for a long time has been integrally tied to technology, to allowing lawyers to access content most easily when they need it during their work. So KM and innovation in the US and Canada are almost interchangeable words. And innovation
teams... It's a bit interesting because that isn't the case in the UK,
I know.
Right? So you're making a really important distinction there.
Yeah, no, it's a very different jurisdictional difference. So yes, it is different, but what that means is that when I talk about being in KM, my first job in knowledge management in Canada, I was dealing with metadata on the internet. I was working on the development of an enterprise search project for the firm I was working with. I was looking at the way we priced litigation matters, breaking it down by budget, and so that we were able to leverage a technology system to align client billing guides with the way that we build work internally and to enable us to more easily identify what different parts of a historical matter had cost so that lawyers could budget for future matters. So it was from the very beginning really tied to technology in a way that in the UK would be called innovation, not knowledge management. Having said that, yeah. I did oversee in both Canada ultimately and in the US the research services department, as well as KM lawyers, which are sort of equivalent to PSLs in the UK, as well as innovation teams responsible for implementing technology solutions to solve problems internally and for clients.
Okay, so where does the interest in technology come from? I just get the sense that it's something that's been, you know, really important to you for a long time.
When I started working in this area in Canada, I just realized the power that technology had to lift some of the burdens on lawyers and to enable them to work better. And the more I worked with technology, the more I became also fascinated by the way that technology has the ability to remove some of the hurdles around access to justice and improve the way that we do law generally, not just with our clients from internally and within a law firm, but also for society. And really, when we talk mm-hmm. about law at its core, actually making that better, making the way that we offer services better, allowing people who may not otherwise be able to afford legal services to access those services. And so I had worked in court. So when I came out of law school, I worked with a judge for a year and saw a lot of unrepresented litigants in court and was really aware of how much of a disadvantage they had compared to people who could afford to pay for good lawyers. And so I think all of those things together gave me a real interest. But then I just became quite obsessively interested in the legal tech ecosystem. And I can't explain to you why, but it is absolutely my passion now. I mean, 100%, it's my passion.
I mean, an incredible timing as well, right? to have that passion.
Yes, right? I've been very
it
lucky.
It really chose your moment well.
Yeah.
So as I understand it, you were at Paul Hastings and you were heading that function, right?
Innovation, our department was a very broad department that also included project management, legal project management, matter management, all kind of e-discovery, litigation support. So I looked after the knowledge, research services, and innovation, including client-facing innovation at Paul Hastings globally. And so that was a really exciting role, and we had a wonderful department with a very talented team.
So you're heading that team. You've got 40 people working for you, as I understand it. So it's, you know, it's a big team. It's a big firm. Why not just stay with it and just carry on and, you know, 15 years go by or whatever? There's a really interesting pivot that comes next, right?
While I was at Paul Hastings, one of the things that so a couple of things. I think I am quite entrepreneurial by nature. When I moved to New York, something I found was there is not a lot of information out there on how to do innovation in firms. And so I started a group that was not a formal nonprofit, but essentially a nonprofit, which I founded with a few other people in the industry on actually, how do we do this? What are the methodologies leveraged in other industries for driving change across large organizations? And how can we use those methodologies to our benefit in law? So that was called Legal Innovation and Design. And we ended up with about 400 members who would join monthly meetings on a regular basis. So it's just something, when I see something that doesn't exist, I feel the need to do something about it. And so the next thing was, I felt very frustrated by the fact that when you're working in innovation in a firm, it's very common to have to look up the legal technology solutions that exist in the market. A lawyer comes to you and says, I just joined the firm. I was using X system at this other firm. Why don't we have it? And you need to find that solution, understand what it is, be able to converse fluently about it. Or someone comes to you and says, you know, I would be really keen to have this type of a solution. And you need to find and understand all of the ones that are available on the market, or you're understanding you're dealing with a project internally. There are so many reasons why you need to look for what exists. At the time, there was simply no place to go where you could find all of the legal technology solutions and then filter them to find the types of things that would work for the specific problem you were solving or for your specific environment internally. And I found that really frustrating and surprising. Google was incredibly imperfect for this purpose. So you'd end up spending hours and hours calling around to people saying, what do you use? Or have you heard of such and such? That was not only a waste of time, it also ensured that you were only speaking to your own little echo chamber. And so in early 2020, I decided we should just build it. My husband, who also works in legal technology, I had said to him, you know, this is an issue, there's a gap in the market. And we spent the next 10 months or so doing research on the industry, looking at thousands of sites across the web, having many, many conversations with people and with vendors, and pulling together all of the data about legal technology solutions globally. We hired developers to develop a proprietary search and a website for us. We developed taxonomies, collected data across the points that I knew mattered to people, had a beta group of people we tested it with, and we launched something called Legal Tech Hub in October 2020, which at the time was a side project. We obviously took advantage of the pandemic, so we were spending weekends and every evening doing research on legal technology. So we were a really fun couple during the pandemic.
Hi, everyone. This is Steve interrupting the interview very quickly just to say that if you are considering a career change of any kind, why not check out our website at projectpivot.co.uk, where we've got a whole range of free resources for you that I think you might find helpful. So do check it out, projectpivot.co.uk. Let's get back to the interview. What I find quite really interesting is that as you were describing the problem, I think a lot of people would have felt the frustration, but not taken it a step further to think, you know what, I'm actually going to create the solution. So what is it about you that goes that step further, thinks, you know, I'm going to do something about this?
I don't know. I think that's just who I am. I think that's also partly why I like working in innovation, is because you are working on digging into a problem, but then also developing a solution for it. And there's something incredibly satisfying. Also, I think that's what lawyers do, Steve. Lawyers are solution finders. And the really good lawyers are ones who don't just find the solution, but also deeply understand the problem and how it affects their client and their client's business first. And then they find a solution that is often quite a creative solution. So to me, when people make generalizations about lawyers being boring or lacking creativity, I don't believe that. I think the opposite is true. And so I actually think that my brain is analytical like a lawyer's, but it also is very geared towards problem solving. Anyway, we built it and it was a side project. At the time, I had informed my firm that this was happening and received, the green light to launch this as a essentially a hobby at the time. It went live in October 2020. We gradually developed all of this traffic and on the site, and a lot of interest, a lot of media interest. We noticed that the traffic was growing steadily. We ultimately had traffic from over 160 countries. We were asked to speak at meetings of lawyers in really interesting places, China and Russia and Kazakhstan and Brazil. Wow. And it was fascinating. Peru. So there was real interest. And then in 2021, my now business partner approached me, someone I knew from the industry, Jeroen Plink, who is the former CEO of Clifford Chance Applied Solutions. He was the CEO of Practical Law in the US and built it up and sold it successfully to Thomson Reuters. He was looking for his next project, essentially, and was interested in Legal Tech Hub and had this vision to turn it into an insights and analysis company, which was really aligned with where I thought it could go. So it had always been on our kind of initial deck to then layer content on top of the directory in a way that was useful. So Jeroen came on board as an investor and a co-founder, and I had this really tricky decision to make. Do I continue leading this team that I love at the firm, or do I take a risk and take a leap of faith and become an entrepreneur, you know, take a massive salary cut? But in the end, what I thought, Steve, is this is never going to happen again. It will never happen again that I have an idea, I execute on that idea, and then there's sufficient interest in it that I am financially able to really take a punt at growing it into something viable. And I thought, I will always regret it if I don't see where this goes. And so since early 2022, we've now been growing Legal Tech Hub into a fully fledged commercial entity, an insights and analysis company for legal technology.
Amazing. I mean, it's such a fantastic story. Tell me a little bit more about that culture shift from going from a massive firm with you know, really considerable resources to something not that.
Oh my gosh.
How did it feel?
It was really scary. Honestly, it was really scary. Anyone considering that, I would just say, if you are frightened, that's totally normal and expected. It was a radical change in the first few weeks. Was the only person I was speaking to was Jeroen, and we were speaking 5 times a day or more. And that was really weird to go from having, you know, my team, the whole department, the whole firm of, you know, thousands of people, to just the two of us and our developers who are overseas. But we now, over the 2 years we've grown, we have 16 people. We're hiring for more people. Last year, early in the year, we launched our subscription platform to really deep content and resources for lawyers and law firms and legal departments. And we ended the year with over 80 enterprise-wide subscribers. So there is something very satisfying in building something that you care so much about because it's yours and you can craft it. And seeing people come on board and starting to develop a culture of your own within the company, that is really, really satisfying. It's putting your hard work into something that's yours. It's like your baby, you know? So that it's really different. And I did miss my team terribly initially, but we now have a team. And so, and I'm still connected, really heavily connected to the innovation and legal tech ecosystem within law firms. But now I would say my network has grown even bigger because what we do requires us to be out in the industry. And so that's really satisfying. But yes, it was a huge shift, I have to say, to go from so much bureaucracy to none, for example.
I get the feeling you've not looked back. Right? It's you know, the messages you've been getting from the market have been so overwhelmingly positive. It must have been a great ride, particularly in the last year, 18 months.
It has been. And there are ups and downs. I mean, I do think anyone who's been in a startup will know you have times when it's, you know, you're on an incredible high. And then there are times when you think, oh, gosh, is this going to work? You know? And I think the key, I heard from someone recently who had a very successful exit last year, that one of the keys to making it work is to just keep going through those times and to have faith that you will be able to push through and that it will work out. And so part of it is tenacity, definitely. But the other thing that I think is interesting is you go from doing things within, you know, your line of work within a much larger organization to suddenly doing everything. So you're going, you know, you're looking at marketing, you're looking at sales, you're looking at setting up payroll and how do you pay taxes and what are the corporate documents necessary for this and hiring lawyers to do things. And it's an amazing, from an administrative perspective, there's so much to think about. And now what's interesting is, you know, we're in, gosh, year three now, amazingly, just the very beginning of year three. And we're starting to go back the other way. So now we've grown big enough where I'm starting to think, okay, we need some structure. And, you know, these people are responsible for this. These people are responsible for that. Perhaps we need an org chart. So it's really interesting seeing that evolution.
Brilliant. I mean, you are absolutely uniquely placed to comment on the legal tech ecosystem, right? So I'm going to ask you a few questions about that, because I know the audience is going to be really interested. So, you know, what most excites you at the moment about what you're seeing? Where are the opportunities and where is the real innovation? Where's the cutting edge at the moment?
I'm going to be very boring and say what everybody expects me to say, which is generative AI and advanced AI. And I make the distinction because generative AI, what we've seen over the last year, is one of the aspects of advanced AI that is really exciting, but we're seeing other AI agents, to me, is where I'm really excited for this year. So not just generative AI, but the ability to work with AI that can reason and perform end-to-end workflows is very exciting in the legal ecosystem. Data enablement, so leveraging internal data to the benefit of an organization is very powerful. And we're seeing a lot of firms and corporate legal departments start to take that seriously as they consider leveraging advanced AI across their organizations. But this really is a time when there is so much to be excited about when it comes to technology and the law. And I know people are worried about it as well and skeptical. But I would say this is a real time for optimism. There's technology that for the first time is able to do some things that really were not feasible before. It allows for transformation, real transformation and digitization of certain legal workflows and processes that will make it much easier for lawyers to do things at a very high level of excellence and remove a lot of the drudge work from lawyers that they've been tasked with for, you know, centuries, really. And so it's an exciting time from my perspective.
You see, I find that really interesting that you've positioned it. Maybe I'd expect you to, of course, but you do position it as something positive and exciting and optimistic. I guess there are a lot of lawyers out there who might be thinking it's a threat. I mean, if you just completed your training contract and you were right at the start of a legal career, is there still going to be a job around in 2 or 3 years' time?
Yes, that's my answer, yes. I teach a class on legal technology and the business of law. And it was interesting that the last time I taught this class, just in the autumn last year, I had students come in. I always ask them how they feel about legal technology at the beginning of the class. And of course, there are some who are really scared for that reason. This is going to take our jobs. And by the end of the class, once they've really delved into the solutions and looked at how this works, they're excited because they realize these are tools that enable them to do better work than they were able to do before. It may have an impact on the way that we staff legal matters, but I think that's a trend that we've been seeing for a long time and that will continue. I don't think we will see legal work done exclusively by lawyers. It will be done by a team of people, including lawyers, but also data analysts or data scientists, project managers. And that's a positive thing for clients because it means you're able to draw upon data in a way that provides much better advice than people have been able to do manually before. I think it's the same thing we've seen in the past. People were highly skeptical of the internet and worried about it. People were highly skeptical of email. Email. You know, the Law Society of England and Wales was terrified of email as a form of communication for lawyers when it first launched, and now we can't get lawyers to stop working in email. E-discovery, same thing. People didn't like it initially. So I think this is another one of those cycles, although from my perspective, it will be more transformative than those even.
When you're talking to solution providers, do you find that any of them have legal backgrounds? I mean, what I'm trying to find out is there actually a real opportunity here for someone who has had, let's say, 4 or 5 years working as a lawyer to actually identify some pinch points and go away and find a technology solution that they might be really well qualified to produce or create themselves?
Absolutely. And that's where many of the solutions that are doing extremely well today have come from. Lawyers who are working recognize that there is a pain point, that it doesn't make sense for them to do something manually. It's highly repetitive. And then they go off and develop a solution themselves. So, and especially now that this technology is so accessible, I think that's more feasible than it ever has been.
So if you've got that combination, which you seem to have, of you know, clearly the lawyer mindset, but also a real interest in technology as well, this is a really good time to be alive, right?
There's never combination been a better of the time. Two things. Never been a better time for those people, Steve. And if anyone wants to reach out, I'm very happy to talk to them. That is where we're seeing some really interesting AI solutions emerge that do very specific things. So people who are worried about it, I would say, look for solutions where they've thought very carefully about the specific legal problem that this solves and why advanced AI is relevant for solving it. It will usually be not just one type of AI or one type of technology, but a combination of those to solve a particular problem. And those solutions they're very powerful. So yes, if you have an interest in both of those areas and you're considering a leap, this is a great time for it.
Excellent. Let's round up, because I know you're very busy. What's the kind of the year ahead looking like for you? What are your aims and ambitions for 2024?
Well, I want to see Legal Tech Hub grow. We want to triple revenue by the end of this year, so that's an audacious goal. I'm excited for law firms and corporate legal departments. I think those that have already jumped in and started experimenting with generative AI, this is the year where they're going to start getting very serious about driving adoption of use cases, transformed use cases that they've identified already. And so we're going to see some actual traction and gains in the market from that. I think what's interesting is we'll probably also see a larger distance emerge between those firms that have already jumped in and those that were wary and haven't yet done anything. And I think the distance between those forerunners and laggers will continue to grow over the next years with some real impact on the legal market. So it's an exciting time. But the one thing that I am, as I mentioned, really excited about this year in the industry generally, that AI agents and the way that they're going to be leveraged, I think will be key, and also large language models that have been trained specifically on legal content and legal information.
That's one to look out for this year.
Yes, exactly.
Brilliant. We're going to watch your progress with a great deal of interest. Thank you ever so much for speaking to us today.
Thank you for having me, Steve.